It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I've got a very special show today. I have parents of three Anchorage Olympians in the studio today. Some of them are headed to Sochi, where the Winter Games start tomorrow. So we're pre-recording the show. I always wanted to talk to the parents rather than the athletes. We've heard from the athletes, but as a parent, I identify more with them, with the pride and the trepidation and the sacrifices made for a young person to succeed at the highest level. And I'm looking forward to our discussion today to learn how you produce an Olympian and how it feels, good and bad, once you have one in the family. So that's our show today, and I want to introduce my guest because it's a unique panel. You know, Anchorage is producing more and more Olympic athletes, and we have some that are at the very highest levels, and it's really exciting to see them off to Sochi and the opening of the games, which will take place tomorrow, Friday. With me are Ron and Deborah Randall, parents of Keegan Randall, one of the world's best cross-country skiers. Thanks for being with us, Deborah.
Good morning.
Ron.
Hello there.
And Marty Schultz, her daughter is Jessica Schultz, who has been on the U.S. curling team. This will be her second Olympics. Thanks for being with us, Marty.
Good morning.
And Mary Stassel, she's the mother of Ryan Stassel, who is the freshest Olympic team member, having just joined the snowboarding team, right?
Correct.
And we have a video of that race in which he made the team up on our website. You can check it out at alaskapublic.org or our Facebook. And he's only 21 years old.
He is, yeah.
So tell me, did Ryan, like, learn to snowboard at Hilltop and the whole thing, just like other Anchorage kids?
He did. He started at Hilltop, I think he was six, in kindergarten. The Hot Doggers program, they called it, at Hilltop. And the bus would come to school, pick him up, take him to Hilltop twice a week, and he got on a snowboard. And once he was on a snowboard, he never wanted to get off.
Yeah. And a lot of kids went and did that, but he's the only one who made the Olympics. So he's had some kind of amazing ability level that must have showed up early, or did it take a while?
I think, you know, Ryan always looked like he had good form from day one. But when he was nine, or I think he was around nine, he decided to enter competition at Hilltop. And I couldn't imagine dropping my child off at Hilltop for the day. But I did. And when I went back to pick him up, he had a gold medal in his hand.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, how did this happen, you know? And he said, can I come back tomorrow? There's one more. I said, sure, you know. So same thing. And he was invited to nationals at that point.
Wow.
And I said, you're nine. You've been to no place except Hilltop. You're not going to nationals. And then the next year is when we really started getting involved in snowboarding.
And you realize, I mean, obviously at that point you realize, there's some kind of natural talent here, which is remarkable.
That's what people were telling us.
Yeah. And now at 21, he's made the U.S. Olympic team. And I guess it was a little bit unexpected, right? Because Sean White, the flying tomato, had a fall, and that created an opening for him to slide in there.
Sure. There were, you know, Ryan has been on the U.S. team since I think he was announced last spring.
Mm-hmm.
And there were five Olympic competition qualifying events this winter. And, you know, very strict requirements to get in. And so it came down actually right to the last race. You know, three were initially named to the team, and Ryan was sitting right on that bubble. And 2 days later, they worked the numbers and got a fourth person in. So,
and he's a graduate of which high school?
Service.
All right. Yep. I'm sure they're going to be cheering. So Keegan Randall is, we can now say, the greatest woman cross-country skier in U.S. history. The races she's won, she's the best sprint skier in the world. It's undisputed. She's won that championship. She's been in two previous Olympics. Now she's going to the Olympics, and everybody's got all this hope and expectation. That's a lot of pressure. Deborah, I mean, she must be good at dealing with pressure, but this is something else, right?
Well, we've been watching her do various interviews because of this being the Olympic year. And what she says to them is, this has been building for many years. She made a goal when she was in high school to go to the Olympics, and not only just go to the Olympics, but to medal in the Olympics. So this is a plan that's been in the works for many, many years. And so she's a veteran, as you said. This is her fourth Olympics, and she's had a lot of experience dealing with pressure. I'm sure there'll be a lot of pressure, but as any athlete will tell you, the pressure is on themselves. when she goes to that start line, she's going to put it all out there no matter mm-hmm. what the outcome. And she's just very excited because she loves the course and she has a chance to do very well for the United States.
Personality-wise, is she the kind of person who more pressure brings on more excellence? I mean, because some people, the pressure, it has the opposite impact.
She has amazed me ever since she was in high school that she handles the pressure. I can't handle the pressure. Uh-huh. I told her it's much harder to be a spectator than it is to be an athlete because you get so nervous for your child. You just want them to be happy and do well. But she has a routine that she does, and so she devotes her time and energy to the routine, puts her focus on getting everything ready, and then, you know, goes out there. But I'm sure there's a lot of butterflies, too.
There got to be.
Yep.
So, Ron, we were talking about how Ryan Stassel got started as a snowboarder. Sounds like he kind of picked himself to be a champion just through his ability. How did Keegan get started? Was it obvious from very young age that she was going to be a superb skier?
It's hard to say. I was in the alpine ski business, and so I envisioned my kids being skiers. And I'm competitive myself, and once I met Deborah, her family has been competitive in the local area here for years, and on a national and international level as well. So I think it was a natural fit. I mean, it just made sense to me. However, you have to limit your expectations, or you're right. bound for some disappointment. So I could see the potential there, and I think the two of us in raising the kids in general just gave them a lot of opportunities. And Keegan was a person that just kind of took it. You mm-hmm. know, she loved to do everything, and if she ran across something new, she wanted to try that. So she had herself out there having fun, doing things all the way along the way. I actually started her on skis the day after her first birthday. And so far, there's no legislation against that. A little bit crazy.
It helps if they could stand first, right?
Well, the whole idea was to help her develop some balance and motion, and the idea that we could say that she started that young, and uh-huh. she was on skis at that, and some lost pictures would prove it. So, uh-huh. And I knew other alpine skiers had started at a very young age, so I wanted to give the kids that opportunity. I even had a short pair of skis, 80 centimeters, squirreled away from uh-huh. my days in the ski rental business. So, uh-huh. So she had a good early start, and then when she came up here, when we moved up here in '85, she was three and a half or so, and so those first couple years we were here, she got out and played in the snow and couldn't do a mm-hmm. turn on skis, but liked being out there and never complained about it. So I think that's the kind of start she had.
Yeah.
And just supportive, not only the two of us, but the rest of the extended family have been supportive and helpful in getting her and the other kids out.
Now, I've had kids in Junior Nordic, and I've done a little bit of coaching at Junior Nordic. And one thing they always talk about, I know, quote Aurora, shout out to Aurora, that Keegan was in Aurora's group. And I've also heard that Keegan never made it to the very highest level, that she was like one of the faster kids, but did she make it to Hawk?
No, she was a Hawk. She loved it when she
okay.
made it to Hawks. I was actually her first coach. I want to
right?
make that clear because I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
I was Polar Cubs, but we were basically just mushing around the trails.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and
it's having
the kids
fun.
Going. And having fun. And that's yeah. what I liked about Junior Nordic, is that was the major impetus of that group. And when they found some kids that were exceptionally competitive, well, then they gave them the opportunity to do mm-hmm. that and gave all the kids a taste of it. But there was never any pressure that, you know, you're not going to, you know, succeed here unless you get competitive and beat somebody
yeah,
else. It was all
just
about
ski how fast you want to
having
ski.
Having fun. Yeah. And they were congratulated.
Yeah, but some kids are always at the front of the group. And you know that those and I have to tell you, I have motivated innumerable groups of Junior Nordic skiers by telling them, well, you know, Keegan Randall was a Junior Nordic skier. You could do just as good as she did.
And I think she was a typical Junior Nordic skier. She uh-huh. she was done with practice after being out there an hour, hour and a half, and then she was off jumping off the cornices with friends mm-hmm. on cross-country skis, you know, just pushing the limits, having fun mm-hmm. out in, and that's what it's all about.
Finding as many ways to wreck skis
yeah.
as you can.
yeah, well, we'll go there.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Marty, Jessica Schultz is now obviously one of the best curlers in the country. She's been on the team twice. This is a sport that most people have no awareness of, you know, and it comes up to the Olympics, we get a little bit of knowledge of it.
Yes.
How did you guys get into it?
We had a friend of ours. We used to do the softball, basketball, kids were into all of that. And one of our renters did a learn to curl here at the Anchorage Curling Club and said, you guys need to come try this. This is incredibly fun. And so for the first 2 years, Jessica and Josh, her brother, and myself, we all curled on the same team in their new curler league. And the second year, she was a little hesitant to come back because she was 12 and it was, you know, not the coolest thing.
Not the coolest thing.
But she came back, and then she was fortunate in that the junior team, somebody had aged out, so they needed a girl to play on their junior team. And, of course, there's a junior state play downs, and which lead to nationals. And once she got into that, she was the Alaska State junior champion for 5 years here. And once she got into that, it was got a part of the competitive side of it, mm-hmm. and saw what the sport had to offer.
Was it like we've heard from the other parents that you saw a potential pretty much right from the start, or was it a slower build?
No, she had, like typically the process when you start curling, there's four positions on the team. You start at lead, then you do that for a year or two, then you play second, then you play third, and you work yourself up to skip, which is, well, the first year that she played on the competitive team, she was actually their third on the team, so she progressed up the ladder pretty quickly, uh-huh. and then the next year the skip aged out, so then she was the skip, you know, the second year that she was on the competitive team. So
now you're going to have to give us a very small primer on the sport, right?
Okay.
It's probably been 4 years since I saw it being being played.
Yes. There's four people on the team. Each person on the team throws two rocks. So the lead throws two rocks, the second throws two rocks, and the third throws two rocks, and then the skip. And the skip is usually the most experienced one on the team, and they're on the far end of the ice if you're watching. They're calling the game strategy and all of those types mm-hmm. of things. So each team throws a total of eight rocks. They alternate throws. So there's always two people sweeping, which helps the rock go further down the ice, or it helps the rock stay straighter.
Direct it, yeah.
Yep. And mm-hmm. so the skip is on the other end, and there's an awful lot of strategy that's involved with the game that people that don't know the game, when they come to watch, if they don't understand the strategy, there's a huge amount of strategy that's involved, especially uh-huh. at her level now.
And how does the U.S. stack up internationally?
The women's side will be very, there's probably six or seven teams where if they each played each other 10 times, they would probably split five times each time. So mm-hmm. it's going to be just
close,
a matter.
Right?
Yeah, it's going to be. They finished fourth at Worlds last year. They lost a bronze medal game to Canada. So the competition is very even between the top probably six or seven teams. So,
mm-hmm. How exciting.
Yeah, it will be nerve. Fingernail biting.
So. Yeah. That's so exciting. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking with parents of three Olympians who will be competing in the Winter Olympics, which are just about to start in Sochi, Russia. And Anchorage must be a pretty unique town in the country to produce as many. If we had all the parents of all of our Anchorage Olympians, we'd have the whole studio would be crammed with people because we've got so many people going to the Olympics, which really shows what a great sports town Anchorage is in terms of, and the APU skiing program in particular, I believe, has four skiers on the U.S. Mm-hmm. Olympic team. That's extraordinary. So we were hearing from Ron and Deborah Randall, the parents of Keegan Randall. Marty Schultz, who was just talking, is the father of Jessica Schultz, who's on the curling team. And Mary Stassel, who's the mother of Ryan Stassel, just made the Olympic team in snowboarding, and it's going to be really exciting to see all of them. Ron, did you want to throw something in?
Yeah, I have the experience of going back to Upper Michigan for Junior Olympics 1 year, and Keegan was a strong skier at that time, but they also had a lot of local racers that were expected to do well and did do well. And I'm from back in that area from Wisconsin. So I knew that Ishpeming was where the Ski Hall of Fame is located. There's a big collegiate program at Marquette. So I expected to jump into a hotbed of skiing just like here. Well, they didn't even open up the areas until the weekends before the race. They didn't have any buildings. They used army tents for a place to warm up. And when the kids, even the local kids, did a great job, it was very small little articles. So I came back with the realization that Anchorage is incredible. We as a community, deserve a lot of credit, and it's on all levels. It's in the school programs. The media does such a great job of giving the kids credit for what they're doing, whether or not they're winning the race. They, you know, really cover it well. The Nordic Ski Association, with all the programs they have, and Junior Nordic program now specifically, and the trail grooming that makes all that possible, and the trail system within the city that I just don't think people realize. If you look at other cities to live in or to recreate in, we're so heads above, it's incredible. And I think we need to come to that realization of what a wonderful winter city we are and what we're producing out of here.
It is extraordinary. And that the Nordic skiing is obvious. We're probably close to tops in the nation. But also, in terms of alpine skiing, how many places can you have your kid go alpine skiing after school every day? I mean, that's pretty unique. So I'm interested in something that I've always wondered about, and I want to hear from all the panelists. You have your kid get into a sport, and at some point you move from this recreational level to this very competitive level. And I've seen it, you know, sort of take over families' lives, that all they're doing is sort of supporting that kid being in the sport. And I wonder, I'm interested in your thoughts on sort of the intensity level that it required to do this, and you know, any sacrifices are required for your children or for your family to get to that level. I mean, now you're getting the payoff of going to the Olympics, or if that's like the, but most people aren't getting that. So it's interesting to me to sort of touch on what those trade-offs are. Mary, do you want to start? Your son Ryan, I mean, he obviously loves snowboarding, so there's no sacrifice for him to snowboard as much as possible, right?
Right.
Was there any trade-off in that?
I don't know if there is a trade-off, but, you know, certainly you start off and at a local level, and it's every weekend going to the hill and then advancing from Hilltop to Alyeska and, you know, making the trek down there and coming back. And then, you know, maybe the next year getting a place down there for the winter and staying there and doing more. And so I think there's a trade-off in that sometimes you leave the other things at home on the back burner. And you just keep going, you know. And for Ryan, when he was, I don't want to misquote the year, but it was sometime around, you know, the beginning of high school. Like, for him, that was where he needed to make a decision. Am I going to try to do this for the rest of, you know, for the rest of my able life? Or what am I going to do? Because,
and that's pretty young to be making that decision.
It is. It's a lot on their shoulders, you know. And I really think that it had to come from within him, and we needed to see that in him, that this, he was truly passionate about this. It wasn't like, oh, I'm good at it. You know, it was something that he really lived to do, and was truly serious. And he just kept pushing himself. When you see a kid have that much passion, that much drive, you just naturally, you need to follow it.
And that's great. When somebody can follow their true passion and take it so far, then that's totally
you know,
validating,
you can,
and exciting.
You can put two kids side by side, and they may have the same skill level, but you have one of them that has a little bit extra, that just keeps pushing themselves, and it's in their body. It's everything they do, you know, is about that.
You know, I was talking to an elite skier about the amount of time that they spend on the snow, the amount of work they do, and sort of the agreement was, if you were doing this to be in the Olympics, that would be really dumb. You better be doing it because you love skiing, right?
Yes.
And you hear these stories like the Andre Agassi story of this poor guy who became one of the world's best tennis players, but hated tennis. You know? So curling sounds like a really fun game, though. But did Jessica ever hit a limit? Think, enough curling.
No, in fact, for Jessica and for us, she made a decision her senior year in high school. If she was going to compete at a higher level, Duluth, Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin is where, you know, to be able to compete against higher level athletes. So when she turned 18 or graduated from high school, she moved down to Duluth, got a job, went to school down there, and just actually she worked in a curling club. So she would, after the club would close, she would throw rocks, or so for her it was just having to move away to you know, it got where we would see her maybe once every year and a half or 2 years because, well, for her job, you know, her vacation time was spent up in Canada training or camps or that kind of stuff. And so and our vacation time was spent going to see her compete somewhere usually. Mm-hmm. So she pretty much had to go, and that's still, she lives in Minneapolis now. Her team is from, there's some from one from Madison, one from Chicago. But the majority of their competitions are in Canada. Every other week is, you know, or North Dakota, Wisconsin, that's where the majority of their competitions are. So mm-hmm. for
so
her,
it's a family sacrifice. Oh, yeah. Go away.
That's for sure. Yeah. She, we don't see her obviously, and she doesn't, she's, you know, she, when she was up here, she, we had a, have a boat. She loved to be out fishing and those types mm-hmm. of things, but that kind of stuff kind of gets pat, you know, like I said, all of her vacation time is used up, you know, in her curling. So, mm-hmm. You know, her doesn't get back home nearly as often as I think she would like. So.
Yeah. So will she be turning it into a career, do you think? I mean, or, and I don't know how long a career lasts. It looked like most of the members of the team were pretty young.
Most of the members, she's 29. I think there's a couple members on her team this year that are in their mid-40s.
Oh,
that
right.
I think, you know, and it's a serious commitment for them. Their Skip, I think, has two kids. Mm-hmm. So the amount of commitment it takes, I think, and curlers, you know, there's not a huge amount of money in it. So all of them have to work, you know, they all work full-time 40-hour a week jobs. So it's like for Jessica, it's up at 5 a.m. and running, or she has her obviously cardio some days and weightlifting, but that's all at 5 a.m. and then it's her work day and then curling at one of the clubs wherever she can get ice time afterwards. So
mm-hmm. It's really got to be for the love of the sport because, I mean, there is some potential in snowboarding or somewhat a little bit in Nordic skiing that you're going to be up on, you know, you're going to be famous at some level, but curlers are really never going to be famous. I mean, they get some recognition, but it's not going to be
right.
Wheaties box type stuff.
No. Yeah. No. So.
But being the best in the world at something is
yep.
pretty special.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So, Ron, I know that, and Deborah, the elite skiers, even way below Keegan's level, spend the entire year training, and their cardiovascular systems are like the best in the world. Mm. They run, they ski on the glacier if they're lucky enough to be at APU, mountain running, then skiing all winter and skiing and training many, many, many hours. Address both of you, like, what were some of the trade-offs, pluses and minuses? Do you feel like there's some sacrifice in that?
I think it's been easy for us.
Really?
Really, the perspective, because listening to Mary and Marty, they didn't get sucked into the sport to begin with, or they weren't having to drive, you know, like Ryan to practice and then not be out there themselves. We were already active. We did that stuff already. Keegan got involved because we were there, and mm-hmm. of course we wanted her
it's a family affair.
Yeah, do her thing as well. But we already were skilled, and we got to go play at the same time, and certainly there's that part of me that lives vicariously through my daughter. Uh-huh. And, you know, my hopes initially were with alpine skiing because that was my sport, but it made sense. And you talked about the aerobic capacity and things. Keegan eventually made the choice herself, but it was obvious it was the best choice because she has a motor that's hard to match. You know, she can do things that, you know, I couldn't do.
Or that 99.999%
of people. Yeah, certainly not me. But yeah, that's the amazing thing about what she does and the other athletes that she's competing with. That's what's opened my eyes is to be around the international competitions and seeing that there's this group of athletes in the world that are just incredible. And I'll throw in a couple things here, too, mm-hmm. that the stories of the parents here today are identical to the ones in Norway, Sweden, Russia, anywhere else. Your kids get enamored with something, they train like crazy, and then you never see them again. Mm-hmm. I mean, rarely. I feel like I got
so
to see Keegan.
So that's a sacrifice.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
two or three, yes, that sacrifice. Now, two or three times last summer, And that's it, because she is committed. She's got about 2 weeks when she gets to back off and do other things for fun. She's still active, and then back in weight training and back in for the next year. And she has had this planned out for so many years, like Deborah mentioned, that she knows what she's supposed to be doing. They make small alterations to it, but for the most part, that plan has been in place for 10 or 15 years now.
My gosh. So give me, you know, Marty was talking about Jessica's day of, you know, getting up at 5 and doing training and going to work. Keegan can't have a job at the same time she's skiing at this level, right? What's her day like?
Well, she has had some good jobs here in town. She worked for Skinny Raven for a long time and did it as long as she could, but finally it just conflicted with the training. And yet they're still supportive of her. You know, they help in whatever way they can. And so this is her full-time job now. I don't see how she'd squeeze much more in, but then she throws it on herself as well. She got involved with the Fast and Female program, which is a wonderful development program for young girls. And she's the U.S. president for that. And so in the midst of training up for a race and trying to keep up with the World Cup schedule, she's planning events back here. And they've even had one in Sweden. So she takes on additional things out of her own accord, and that's what you say. We're pretty amazed because she's pulled it off and continues to do that and thrives on that.
Deborah, how does that work in with other big life events, education, family, everything else? I mean, is there room for anything other than skiing in the life of somebody who's at Keegan's level?
Well, unfortunately, if you make the election to be an elite skier at this world-class level, you make a lot of concessions. And we were informed right from the very beginning that this was her goal and she had to do whatever it took to get to that place. So we have a large family and we have a lot of large family gatherings, and she will politely decline coming or she will excuse herself early because her main priority is her skiing. And with the education, she had to make a decision whether to ski collegiately or whether to go with the APU program, which is not part of the NCAA, but does have education and skiing. And she chose that route because she thought she could get the best skiing in. And yet at the same time, she's been able to go to college. So she's what we call a perpetual senior. She got to the level now where she's got to do her senior project, and that's not fitting in with her racing schedule. But I watched a program with Sean White the other day.
I imagine they're probably very, very, they're not too pressuring on Keegan Randall. I bet they sort of will make a few concessions at APU to
maybe
make
sure.
She's just, but I was just going to say that I was watching this special on Sean White, and he was telling the audience that when you're at this type of a level, you have to make sacrifices. You give up your social life. You give up your family life. She's married. She's got a husband that she hardly ever sees. So they make absolute major concessions. And I am absolutely amazed that she's able to do that and to do that for so many years, to give up all those things that we just take for granted. In fact, I tell her I just don't think it's fair because we get to celebrate and have fun after your races and you have to go back to bed and prepare for next day's race.
Wow, amazing. Well, the moment of glory, the moment of the sun, hopefully will pay off. I know she must love skiing, too. She must love the life or she couldn't do it. And we're all really looking forward to the Winter Olympics starting this week. We're actually pre-recording the show so that we could spend time with these Olympic parents of 3 Winter Olympians. The kids are headed off to Sochi to compete. And we're going to be talking much more about it in the second half. Really, really enjoying it. Really looking forward to it. But right now, we're going to turn it over to Aaron Kirkland from AK On The Go, who's going to tell us about outdoor activities for families coming up in February on our monthly edition of the Outdoor Explorer Family Calendar.
Hello, Outdoor Explorers. I'm Aaron Kirkland, publisher of akonthego.com. Welcome to the February Family Calendar. And even in the middle of a winter-spring meltdown, here's what's happening around the state. The Alaska Zoo has extended its popular zoo lights display through the entire month of February. Visit Thursday through Sunday evenings and take a brighter look at winter. Visit alaskazoo.org for times and ticket information. Eagle Crest Ski Area in Juneau is hosting a winter fireworks spectacular Saturday, February 15th at 7 p.m. to celebrate another successful season of alpine skiing and snowboarding. Everyone is welcome, so check out skijuneau.com for great prices on Southeast Alaska's most popular ski slope. Swim Like a Fish Foundation invites the whole family to their annual ice fishing jamboree at Jewel Lake on Saturday, February 8th and Sunday, February 9th. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., your kids can enjoy fishing, ice skating, music, and fun at this benefit for the foundation. Visit swimlikeafishfoundation.com for details. February also marks the beginning of an Alaska tradition, Fur Rendezvous. Kicking off on Friday, February 21st, Fur Rendi is a solid week of outdoor winter fun, whether you run in the frostbite foot race or take a ride at the carnival. Visit furrondi.net for a complete schedule of events, including the Grand Parade on Saturday, February 22nd. Lastly, another Anchorage event with deep roots is scheduled for Saturday, February 8th. Ski for Kids is an afternoon dedicated to the joy of Nordic skiing, and I recently talked with Alice Knapp about the event and the mission behind it. Alice, welcome to the Outdoor Explorer calendar.
Thanks, Aaron.
So tell me about Ski for Kids. This has been going on for quite a few years, hasn't it?
Actually, this is our 14th year.
14 years. And what's the whole mission behind it? Because I know it's not just about getting outside with kids.
No, it actually stemmed from the idea of Holly Reinhardt, who created it in order to raise funds to purchase ski equipment for local elementary schools.
Now, are these kids that are beneficiaries of this equipment, are they the lower income schools, or are they all elementary schools in Anchorage? What's the deal there?
Well, it's been mainly a focus for the Title I schools to help them establish some ski programs within their buildings.
Okay. And so this event is coming up on the 8th of February. And what time should people show up?
Well, if you're pre-registered, the activities begin at 10, and you can stay on up through about 1 p.m.
Okay. And about pre-registering, how do folks do that?
Easiest way is to register online at AnchorageNordicSki.com. Look under Ski for Kids event, and it's very simple to register that way.
Okay. Now, the weather. What's the plan?
Well, the weather is a concern, but I think we'll probably go with the event unless we deem it to be safety hazard for the kids to be out there. If we can't ski, we'll walk the course and still have a lot of fun with all the extra activities we have, including obstacle course, ski joring, slingshot biathlon, sit ski introduction. Lots of fun activities. We have some Olympians, former Alaskan Olympians, that will be coming to cheer us on. So it should be a fun event, even if the snow isn't cooperative.
All right. Well, the thing about kids is that they will have fun just about any place, right?
Yes. And I encourage families to come with their kids to enjoy all the fun things that we're doing.
Cool. Thanks so much, Alice. Look for links to Ski for Kids and all events mentioned in the family calendar at alaskapublic.org. And be sure to join me in March for more kid-friendly fun. This is Erin Kirkland with akonthego.com.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on future programs and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer, and we are talking about the upcoming Winter Olympics, and we have the perfect people to talk about them. We have not the athletes, but the parents of the athletes who are going from Anchorage, talking about how their kids became these amazing athletes, the sacrifices they had to make, and also, you know, the pride and the excitement of it. It's been a great discussion so far, and I wish we had even more time than we do. Ron and Deborah Randall are here, parents of Keegan Randall, the amazing, phenomenal Nordic skier. Marty Schultz is here. His daughter Jessica Schultz is on the U.S. curling team and has devoted her life to curling and exceedingly high level of that sport. And Mary Stassel is sort of the newcomer to this group of Olympians. Her son, Ryan Stassel, just made the snowboarding team and will be competing in Sochi somewhat unexpectedly. And in fact, Mary didn't even have time to make plans to get over there, so she'll be watching it on TV with the rest of us. But Marty, Ron, and Deborah, I know you've all been to the Olympics before and watched your kids competing, and I'd really like to hear what that experience is like. Let's start with you, Marty. I mean, you're do you have special status when you're there, or are you just one of the crowd?
No, you're just one of the crowd. Uh-huh. We learned from Torino. I mean, when you vacation here in the U.S., you're going to go here at a certain time, and you're going you go over there. You just have to, you plan as best you can, but stuff never seems to work out. I know in Italy, we had to take two buses each day and a train to get to the competition, so it would be like an hour and 45 minutes. You'd get up early, you'd get to the bus stop to catch a bus, and that bus didn't show up. Why? I don't know.
That's Italy.
Yeah. So we're taking some relatives with us to Russia that are kind of like, we got to figure out. I was like, you just go over there, roll with the flow. It's never going to work out like you plan. You know, our objective for the whole day is just her first game is on the 10th at 2:00. And they're like, what are we going to do in the morning? And the whole day will be just
getting to the game.
Yes.
Huh?
Focusing on being there at 2:00. Hopefully, you know, we're anticipating, I think, security.
Security's going to be off the charts.
The USOC is planning to, you know, expect an hour and a half to 2 hours a day just standing in line, getting through security. I'm kind of fortunate. I think they're up in the mountain cluster.
The cross country skiing takes care,
you know, so we are staying right in Adler. Mm-hmm. So we... And for this Olympics, we don't have to deal with the public transportation, you know, the security of getting on and off the trains and all of that kind of stuff. So
is it fun, or is it sounds a little bit like a drag the way you're describing it?
Oh, no, there's lots of days where, you know, this is crazy, but you just kind of have to, you know, you're walking past the cauldron every day, you're walking, you know, all of this stuff, you know, and then you just kind of take the whole, you know, it's just a part of being there.
Do you catch any other sports while you're there?
When we were in Torino, we were able to go to short track speed skating. Mm-hmm. The relays, which was just totally insane. There's people flying and skating. You don't know who is, you know, they're touching each other and they're going everywhere. That was insane. That was a lot of fun. And then we went to the aerial ski jumping where they come off the jumps.
Oh, yeah.
And
So many of these winter sports are really fun to watch.
Yes. For us, like for the curling part of it, there's games every day from the day we get there on the 10th, and the finals are on the 21st, I believe. So it's like we can't go and buy tickets to other events. Like
no.
There's a curling game at 2:00 on the 10th. Well, it's pretty much going to eat up getting there.
And it's a bracket, so you don't even know if that's your game.
Yeah. Well, we know when they curl, but...
Oh, you do? Okay.
And each game is like 3 hours. So mm-hmm. It's difficult to say, well, we want to go curling here today, and then we want to go like a trip up to the mountains. We're hoping to make it up to the mountains at some point, but, you know, that's mm-hmm. a full day deal to go up there. And
it's going to cost a fortune to go over there and spend 11 days.
Yes, I can attest to that.
Yeah.
And Bank of America, my credit card can too. So
yeah, I bet.
Yes.
So Ron and Deborah, you guys you're old hands at this. You've been numerous times now.
Well, I think we're going to be trading with Marty's experience because we in Italy we were within walking distance of the, we could see the ski jump, and then
oh,
we were
nice.
Within walking distance of the cross country trails. Now we're in Adler. The events are up in the mountains, and
because Sochi's not really even a. It's not even cold city, right? I mean, it's like...
No, it's a coastal city. They've got palm trees in the city, and right now, lately, it's been 50 degrees, and it's mm-hmm. raining much of the time.
Just like here.
Well, it reminds me a lot of the West Coast, where the storms are coming in mm-hmm. off the ocean and then trying to climb up over the mountains, and so then they drop the snow there. So Sochi, actually, or the mountains of Sochi, the Urals get 3-foot storms. You know, I saw one photo of chairlifts dragging on the ground like they've done in Kirkwood, Squaw Valley, mm-hmm. those places around Tahoe and in the Northwest. So they get a lot of snow, but down in the city, it's a totally different environment.
Mm-hmm. So how does it feel when you're watching Keegan in a race? You know, when I watch my kid do something on stage, like, I'm more nervous than they are. If I was watching my kid in the Olympics, I don't think I could stand it. I mean, but you've been doing it for a long time. Deborah, how does it feel emotionally when that's going on?
Well, I'll answer as a mother. Ron's going to have a totally different take, but I get so nervous. I get so nervous even watching her when she's racing on the World Cup and I'm staring at my computer. My stomach gets all tied up in knots. I'm so nervous. And as a spectator, you don't have any way to get rid of those nerves. The competitor mm-hmm. gets to go race, but it's going to be way fun because we're surrounded by, I have sisters that are going and nieces, and they're very supportive of me. And I was even thinking maybe I should get a prescription Valium or something so I don't want to have the heart attack over in Russia. But
yeah.
Any parent's going to tell you that it is nerve-wracking, mm-hmm. and it's really because you just want your child to be happy. Uh-huh. And in sprint racing, anything can happen.
Yeah,
so
they get knocked over. Yeah.
Yeah, so we experienced that in Oslo when she was also the pre-race favorite, and she went down in the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that anything can happen. So we'll be there and we'll survive.
And when can you see what's happening pretty well? I mean, in distance racing, they sort of ski off into the woods and then they come back a long time later and you find out who won. But sprint racing, you can actually watch it, right? And you can watch it taking place.
Yeah, cross country skiing has typically been a sport where you see the start. The racers go off in the woods, and 10-15 minutes later or longer, they come back, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Vision of mine has always been to see, like at Kincaid, to have cameras out on the course someplace so people in the stadium can watch. Well, guess what? On a world-class level, they do that. They have big jumbotrons at about mm-hmm. 5 or 6 places on the course, so the clusters of spectators can see it either close to them or across the field from them. So if they're not seeing the competitors right in front of them, they're able to watch the race almost as if you're on uh-huh. television, you know, watching television. So it's a great experience from that perspective.
So, Ron, tell us about your emotions during the race.
I guess I'm more analytical. I know what's going on. I've watched it enough now, even though I didn't actually come from cross-country skiing. I've picked up some of the strategy and know the players now, and mm-hmm. so I can see what's going on. So that's really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I don't get as emotional. I mean, nothing's going to make me happier than Keegan reaching the goals that she's looking for, but like Deborah said, it's an unpredictable sport, so you can't get too wrapped up in it because then you're gonna have a huge disappointment when something mm-hmm. doesn't work out. So I just wait till something happens, and then I just revel in the fact that yes, it's fallen together, and Keegan's happy, and then she can move on. And yet, from a larger perspective, that disappointment in Oslo has given Keegan tools to inspire other people and get them to realize that. You know, it's the journey that you're doing. It's not that gold medal or not mm-hmm. the line in the record book, because actually not that many people are going to see that. But it's the idea that you tried your very best and you accomplished it, mm-hmm. or you didn't quite, but you did your very best the day mm-hmm. of the event. And so you got to enjoy the whole experience.
Yeah.
It's made so many memories for me that I'm completely satisfied with just seeing her. And I'll throw in that she was giving us some of these same emotions back in high school days, and when she had her very final track race, which she did win, but she didn't quite make the goal of setting a state record that she wanted to. I actually told her she came off the track that was the last that she had to do for us, that we would never ask her to perform for us. From this point on, for all the work she had ahead of her and the pain she'd go through, that it was going to have to be for her. She had to be out there doing it for her because she
mm-hmm.
loved it.
Mm-hmm. So, and apparently it's worked so far.
And yeah, and because there's no way that anybody could really hang on this number of years with that kind of commitment without it being from within them.
Mm-hmm. So Mary, I think that you've got a kind of a different situation because mm-hmm. your son Ryan is new to the Olympic team.
Correct.
He's only 21 years old, and in a sense, you're watching your baby go down the hill. And then folks want to watch the video of it. AlaskaPublic.org. We're putting up a video of Ryan's winning race that got him into the Olympics. He's going off these huge jumps way up in the air. I mean, that must be nerve-wracking to watch that.
It is. It is. I don't think I realized initially, you know, when we had the, when he was younger and I was at his, all his competitions growing up at Alyeska, you know, the jumps, they were okay. They were, I thought they were huge, but, you know, apparently they weren't. They were certainly, it was good course. They did a great job at Alyeska. Mm-hmm. But when you start getting into the world circuit and going around and seeing some of these jumps, and I really didn't realize just how huge they were, and that 80 feet off the ground is pretty big, and 120-foot gap is pretty far, and, you know, and what can happen when these when you don't make it.
But watching him, I mean, it's incredible to watch somebody fly that far through the air, spin around and around and around and around and around, and then he drops perfectly as if he's just stepped right off the off a bus or something.
Isn't it pretty?
It's mind-boggling. And you just think, well, how the heck did somebody learn to do that?
Yeah, how do you get from A to B? Yeah.
Is this going a little higher each time, or what's the process?
Well, I personally don't know, mm-hmm. but I know there's a lot of hard work. You know, I just wanted to comment on something you said, Ron, with taking the journey. And I think that's something that Ryan has always said, and he recognized it really young, that if he was going to get caught up with all the, you know, the sad things, you know, the accomplishments that didn't happen and the things mm-hmm. that he wasn't able to do, mm-hmm. he would have not be where he is today. He mm-hmm. realized that it really is about, you know, when you have that passion, it's all about the journey. And you can't have that gold medal at the end, you know, waving in front of your nose. If that's what you're doing it for, you may never get there. Mm-hmm. And your life will be very disappointing. Yeah. And so for him, it really is. It's just seeing every step. It's just...
Yeah,
he's on the road.
Well, it's got to be fun from a social point of view, too, because he's hanging out with Shaun White. He's hanging out with all these incredibly cool
it's
guys.
A cool
he's 21
sport.
Years old.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, this is a 21-year-old's dream.
But, you know, when he first started skiing against Shaun White, he was 16. That was pretty cool.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think he thinks too much about it now. It's just kind of...
Yeah, 21. He's an old man, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So what is the event called exactly that he's in?
And he
what
does it, slope style.
So and it's so there's two there's a rail there's a couple of big jumps and then they're trying to spin and do some tricks while they're airborne.
Correct.
So it's not speed related; it's style related.
Right, and certainly speed has. I mean, if you don't have the speed, you can't make the jump. So you really do need to be. You know, the course is pretty well designed for maximum. You know, getting that maximum speed and airtime and the height that they need. But there's a series of rails and jumps that are placed on a course that they snowboard down and maneuver and do tricks on and off. And
it just takes a couple of minutes. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's a sport where U.S. has been pretty dominant in the Olympics. Do you have a sense for Ryan's chances of getting a medal?
Well, you know, it's very similar to the Nordic skiing. It all comes down to how you do on that one particular day, you know, mm-hmm. and anything can happen. You can catch an edge. You can all of a sudden it can have snowed a little bit or, you know, the snow is choppy and you lose your speed or your wax isn't right. You know, there's just so many factors involved. However, you know, Ryan is about 4 years ahead of where he thought he'd be. He was really looking forward to maybe being able to go to the next Olympics. And so this was really ahead of schedule for him. You know, his chances, I don't know. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
He's been skiing against these guys for a number of years, the same people that will be there. You know, he was seventh in the world last year, so we'll see, mm-hmm. you know.
And what happens next? I mean, is this a career where you can actually make a living, and is that something you would like to see happen? Would you like to see him go back and get his accounting degree? I mean, what's the...
I don't think I can see him doing accounting.
Yeah.
But, he is young, you know, mm-hmm. so he's got his whole life ahead of him. And for now, I think this is pretty much what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. He's just focused on this, and great things will come for him later.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a lot of drive and...
Yeah. I guess if you have accomplished on this level in athletics, you could probably accomplish on a pretty high level in a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we are talking to, I'm calling them Olympic parents of Anchorage's Olympic team. They might call it the U.S. Olympic team, but I think we're a winter city, and we are into the Olympics, and we've got so many talented people from our sports culture here in Anchorage who are going to the Olympics in Sochi, which are starting presently and will be going on. And I know a lot of people will be tuning in to watch Keegan Randall. Her parents, Ron and Deborah, are in the studio, and Jessica Schultz, the curler, her dad, Marty Schultz, is in the studio. And we're just talking to Ryan Stassel's mother. Ryan is going to be on the snowboarding team competing in Sochi. I'm interested in this sort of where does life go? Is this elite athletic career affect sort of what happens to the rest of your life? I know Nina Kempel is now head of our Alaska Humanities Forum, so she turned her Olympic career, and she's on the Olympic committee, I believe. In terms of Jessica with her curling, do you see her being a coach? Do you see her sort of turning to something else, or is it how does the sport affect the rest of her life, in your opinion?
I think she's probably still considered young in her sport. Mm-hmm. She could easily, I wouldn't say easily, it's obviously
never easy, right?
But, she could curl into her 40s competitively. Mm-hmm. The hard part for her is, having to work and the training and, that part of the commitment is there is no, I'm sure it's the same with Keegan, there is no social life. But I also, once you get a taste of the competitive side, I don't see her backing off of that. I think she's to a point now where the higher you are, the higher you want to go. I don't see her coming, at mm-hmm. times she would say, I might take a year break, but I think she would have a hard time going into a curling club or around a competitive game and not being a part of it.
Uh-huh. Is there a career that she can follow in that sport as a coach or as a...
Pretty much the coaches in curling are volunteers, like her coaches are volunteers. Mm-hmm. The national coaches, I think there's only like two or three of those that are actually paid coaches. Mm-hmm. The high performance program people. But curling is too, the USOC is kind of leaning on the USCA to kind of do like a skiing type of, as it is now, curling, you compete as a team and your team makes the Olympic trials, where the United States Olympic Committee is really leaning on the United States Curling Association to take 8 or 10 athletes, have them train in Park City, Utah, and
put together a national team.
You're right. The Curling Association is kind of, I wouldn't say against it, but they're more for anybody work hard enough, you can get to the Olympics. Uh-huh. So they're kind of against a hand chosen mm-hmm. few. They want to keep the competition. So they're really at a crossroads between the USCA and the USOC as to how they're going to proceed in the future. Uh-huh. So
tell us how people can get involved in the sport. I know we have a curling club in Anchorage, and is there an opportunity for people to come out and just give it a try or watch it?
Yeah, we have, there's several Learn to Curls throughout the year. I think AnchorageCurling.com usually has those posted. We have Wednesday nights is our new curler leagues at the curling club. They're usually looking for people to play in those. And this time of the year, there's also there's U.S. Club Nationals going on. There's always teams traveling. So most of the leagues are always looking for somebody, mm-hmm. And if you just walk into the club, it's very rare that somebody won't come up and, if you go in and ask what's going on or can I get on the ice, somebody, usually everybody at the club is an advocate for the game. So if they have 10 minutes, they'll take you out on the ice if you want to go out. So
probably watch it and get a rule book before you go out there and try it.
The probably best go try it first. Yeah. I think if you watch it first and don't have any, you wouldn't probably go try it.
Say, what the heck is going on?
Yes. The best is just to get out on the ice. I think Ron.
Cool. Yeah, I was going to say I had some friends that were interested in it, and they asked me to come along, and I tried it a couple times here, and I hung out with a group up in Fairbanks one weekend, and everybody was so welcoming. They're courteous. It's just fun because they're nice people, and you're doing something that you can usually handle physically, and nobody's judgmental. They're all encouraging. Uh-huh. So I had a great time. My schedule didn't allow me to pursue it, but I look forward to it. Marty and I still have kind of a grudge match. You know, we're gonna do a round of skiing and a round of curling. You know, we each have our strengths.
That's it.
I don't know if that'll happen in Sochi, but
it'll be like Nordic combined with the jumping.
Exactly.
Keegan's is favored in the sprint. We're all looking for that one, but that's not the only event she's in. What else is she doing over there?
Well, I think, we don't know, of course, because it all depends on how everybody's doing and how healthy they are, but we're hoping that she'll do the sprint, of course, and then the 10-kilometer classic. And then she is really super excited about the relay.
Our relay team has been super strong.
The four girls placed bronze this year, and we're very close to silver, but it's going to be kind of like what Marty was saying. There's six teams that are just awesome, and so it's going to be a really tight race, and she's just hoping to ski a strong leg for that. And then there's the team relay. The team relay is actually in her classic discipline, and last year they won the world championships in the skate discipline, so that's probably going to be the biggest challenge, but she's looking forward to that. And then, depending on how it goes, she might do the 30K.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So, we're you know, there's always a star of every Olympics. There's sort of the Lindsey Vonn or the Shaun White. I wonder if this could be a year where a Nordic skier could be a star. Have you thought about that and what that would feel like?
If pink hair is in, she's got it down. Well, actually, I've been realizing that there'll be a shift in the media a little bit because Lindsey Vonn is now sidelined a little bit. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think there would have been her knee injury, and she can't come back from it. It's a shame. She's a real nice lady. So I think that focus may change to Keegan as one of the blonde-haired competitors that Americans like to follow. There are lots of other good, strong people on both cross-country teams and other U.S. teams that are going to get a lot of attention. But I think there will be more attention on her, and, you know, hopefully she's prepared for that.
She's very poised when she's interviewed. She seems like she's an old hand at it.
Well, I think she feels comfortable now. She's had a long run on this. You know, she was giving talks in 7th and 8th grade and on a level and used to be a little bit more canned. Now it's a little more off the cuff. She's going to have more interviews for sure. I was going to mention that...
We're just about out of time, so I have to be real quick.
Then I would encourage all parents to follow our example and just expose the kids to a lot. Get out there and do it with them.
Have fun.
But let them try things. They'll find something they like. And just follow their dream. What else is there that's better than that in life?
Thanks, Ron. That was Ron and Deborah Randall, parents of Keegan Randall. And we heard from Marty Schultz, father of Jessica Schultz, and Mary Stassel, mother of Ryan Stassel. All Winter Olympics athletes. Next week on Outdoor Explorer, we're talking about mountain rescue. When Alaskans get lost or hurt in the high country, we rely on a team of volunteers and professionals who are tough and brave enough to come get us in the worst conditions. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Kristen Platt, and I'm your host, Charles Woolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Outdoor Explorer and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.